The World Health Organization has declared an Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo a public health emergency of international concern. There have been around 250 suspected cases and 80 deaths reported in Congo's eastern Ituri province. The virus has also spread across the border into Uganda, where one man has died and another case is being confirmed in the capital, Kampala. Dr. Peter Pio from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine told CNN it's a real challenge for the region.
It's probably that this has been going on for quite a while. As you know, 80 deaths, including four healthcare workers. That doesn't happen, overnight, probably since March. Secondly, as you mentioned, there are two cases in Kampala. They're not connected. So we are in a difficult situation.
That's Dr. Peter Pio there. Jane Holton has previously led the Federal Health Department in Australia. She now chairs the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness. She joined me a short time ago from Geneva. Jane Holton, welcome to Radio National Breakfast.
Morning, Sally.
How concerned are international health officials in Geneva about this Ebola outbreak?
They're pretty concerned. It looks like this outbreak has been underway for some period, probably two, maybe even a little bit more months. And the trouble with something like Ebola is once it gets away from you, it is really difficult to bring back under control. It's potentially in conflict zones, so people are very worried.
So we know that there's long been a significant UN presence in places like Bunia because of ongoing conflict. How much does it complicate response missions when security is not guaranteed?
It really does make life very difficult. If you think about something like this where isolation, managing infection, actually dealing with patients who are infected and also making sure that people are properly buried because there are going to be deaths, there already have been and there'll be more, those become increasingly important. And of course, if you've got a conflict, it's very hard to put those sorts of conditions in place.
Has there been much ongoing work in this part of the world in between outbreaks on Ebola? Because we know in previous outbreaks there have been issues with family members trying to break out their relatives from Ebola treatment centres, understanding of the illness, suspicion about foreign workers coming in, particularly in those high-level suits from head to toe. Has there been much work done to provide a bit of base of knowledge for local people as this response ramps up now?
So there's been a lot of work done across the African continent. In fact, I've just been talking to somebody from the Africa CDC, the Centre for Disease Control, about exactly these issues. Responses that are largely led by local governments and by institutions such as the Africa CDC, working in conjunction with CEPI, my organisation, but most importantly, the WHO, the World Health Organisation. That's really, really important because, no, it's very difficult. A bunch of people arrive in very odd-looking suits. The first thing you're going to do is be suspicious about them. And so that local leadership is fundamental. It's better than it was, but it's not where it needs to be.
And this particular strain that we're seeing at the moment is the Bundibugyo virus. How does that differ from the others and does that have extra complications?
It certainly does. So Ebola, I think people have heard of it. They probably don't know exactly what it is. But basically, it's a nasty hemorrhagic fever. And it can be caused by a number of different types of this particular virus in this group. Now, we do have vaccines, and that's really important for the most common of these. Sadly, this particular variant, we do not have an approved vaccine. And that, of course, means it's difficult to control in the first place because of infection control. But then if you don't have a vaccine, and that, of course, is what everyone is now scrambling to do, to try and see if we can develop something, but also that we can do something about treatments.
Why isn't there a vaccine for this particular strain? Is it less common?
It is much less common. There's only been a couple of outbreaks that people are aware of, and it's probably important to know that Ebola was really only first documented a matter of some years ago in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And also the Zaire variety is the very common version, and that's the version that we have the vaccine for. So no, it hasn't been the focus. People are working on it, let's be clear, but it hasn't been finalised, that work.
And generally, the average fatality rate for Ebola is about 50%, is that correct?
Well, it can be much higher depending on the healthcare access that you get. Mm. So we've had everything from somewhere between 25% and 90% mortality. Good healthcare can help, supportive care, fluids, keeping people isolated. But of course, not every community in a conflict zone is going to have access to that kind of care.
Jane, you were talking briefly earlier about some of the demographics and the geographical challenges here. We know the roads in some of these areas are terrible. Mm. They're only accessed often by motorbike or boat, which means particularly on motorbikes, people are holding on to each other in close proximity to get around. But in places like Uganda, there are some very good roads from the north down to places like Kampala. It's almost as if this thing is running on two speeds.
Yeah, and of course, people sharing bodily fluids, that can be in all sorts of different contexts. That is the way that this thing spreads. So it's not something that comes through the air. We all remember that from COVID. But in these sorts of environments, you can share those kinds of bodily fluids. And there are certain practices, particularly around funerals, that make that much more likely. Now, when transport is easy, as we know, the world is highly mobile. And that's why we don't know where this has gone yet, particularly in Africa. And that's why people are very worried about it.
And with things like motorbikes and then small boats on Lake Albert and so on, there's no manifests for this kind of transport.
No.
You don't know where people have gone.
No, these borders are really, really fluid and people move across those borders all of the time. I've just been talking with an African health minister and they think that there is probably an outbreak, something very, very close to one of their borders. And as he just said to me, well, basically, we don't know who's been in that community. We don't know who's come back to our community. So they're very worried about that.
And in some of those border areas, people identify more strongly along ethnic and tribal lines than they do by nationality. So people are crisscrossing backwards and forwards.
Constantly, for school, for family reasons, for work, for trade, etc. I mean, these borders are not the sorts of things that you or I would be used to going across the border from here to New Zealand, for example. These are literally places that people just come and go as they need.
So the WHO has declared this as a public health emergency of international concern, not a pandemic. Mm-hmm. What does this current declaration mean?
Well, what it means is that resources can be mobilised and it says to everybody, this is really serious. And so the WHO is mobilised, all the relevant people. Again, I've just been talking with somebody about that. It also means that organisations across the globe are mobilising to see what they can do to help. And the thing I would say is different about this is the huge level of cooperation. Everyone springing to action, trying not to duplicate each other, trying to be supportive, but trying to bring their own expertise to bear. But what this does is say very clearly to the world, we need your help. This is urgent. People have already lost their lives and this could get a lot worse.
Congo's deadliest outbreak was between 2018 and 2020. During that period, almost 2,300 people died. Are there concerns that this outbreak could reach similar levels if urgent action is not taken?
Yes, very much so. We don't know where it's gone. We also don't know who has died. The numbers that we're seeing at the moment are around 80. But of course, in communities, if people have already died, that they will not have been properly diagnosed. And then we don't know where it's spread. And of course, this is what happened in that particular outbreak. This thing got away from people before they realised it was a problem. And that's the concern with this. So yes, those death rates could be replicated or possibly even exceeded. People on the ground in DRC who are very experienced with this are saying they feel this is possibly as bad as that particular outbreak.
But they don't really have eyes on accurate numbers because they can't know at this stage by the sounds of it.
Yes. Precisely. And at the end of the day, you can't send people out with a clipboard to start counting at this particular point. What you have to do is try and put in place these public health arrangements, meantime mobilising the science, meantime working with the Africa CDC. Often you can only see the numbers as you look backwards. Yeah. But what you have to do now is work on the response and including whether we can get a potential candidate for a vaccine up and manufactured.
Jane Holton, good to talk to you from Geneva. Thank you very much for your time.
It's my pleasure.